Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. We're hanging out at Huntsville, Alabama. Took a little field trip down I-65 south from Nashville. Hanging out with Justin. Justin, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Real good, man. We're at the Orion Amphitheater here in Huntsville, which is a good homage to, you know, all things aliens, which represent, you know, a good deal of Tom's interest. Other interests of Tom, guitars. Got a bunch of Starcasters, so let's start there, Justin.
Well, at the top of this tour, I guess in 2023, we approached Fender about coming back to them. He was with Gibson forever with his 333 signature model. That was really cool. And we had always discussed like what he might do if he ever actually did go back to Fender, because the Strat is not really his thing anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, a number of us had the suggestion that the Starcaster body would be kind of the closest fit to the 333. And, he's a tall guy, and so I think it's really, you know, about the proportions of what it looks like, you know. And so Brian Thrasher made all of the guitars here, and he's...
Yeah, he seems to be the Blink guy's first call.
Yeah, he's great. He's a phenomenal guitar builder, and he kind of came up with this whole thing, and it's, you know, pretty standard to what Tom has always used, single bridge pickup. Single volume knob.
Now in these, it's different because I know back in the Strat days, and then even I know he had the Dirty Fingers with Gibson, but it's a different Duncan, right?
Yes. So this is the HS5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's like a Duncan custom.
It's a Duncan custom. Okay. That's right. Yeah, and that's what's in all of these.
Do you know if there's a reason why I didn't go with the Invader?
You know, I don't actually know. Okay. I think that he maybe wanted to just.
Because I know the
tone
Invaders
it down or change it up because they're really hot. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
And I think that really worked for him, you know, back in the day. But I think he just may have had these in a few of his guitars.
And
thought that this would be a good idea, you know. So, yeah.
But otherwise, still pretty standard. I know, obviously, you got the standard Fender scale length, one pickup.
Yep.
Treble bleed circuit, or is it just straight volume?
Straight volume.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yep, good. Stop tailpiece, Tune-O-Matic, ABR1, you know, Grovers on a few of them. The first four got Grovers, and then the rest have the Fender locking tuners. We got the Lumalay dots, which is super convenient for him. It's convenient for anyone,
it's
really.
It's practical.
You can't really, you know, no one's ever gonna know that unless, you know, you're standing over it.
Yeah.
This is one of my particular favorites. It's the Mystic Aztec Gold.
Okay.
It's
rad.
Yeah. When Brian first sent these, it was, he sent four, and he said that this was also maybe his favorite sounding one.
Okay.
They all kind of have the same sound, but for some reason I think this one kind of just does a thing.
Yeah. It's weird how wood works like that.
Yeah.
You got the same tone woods and everything, same pickup, but sometimes guitars just speak in a different...
Absolutely.
Way.
This one gets played for one song, too.
Which one?
So, Feeling This.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who did that handiwork? The tape?
So this is all Tom. You know, in true fashion for what he's into, you couldn't just have a plain guitar.
No.
So when we first got these four, I'll show you. I'll get into it later.
Okay.
But there's some stickers on some. And he was staring at this on my workbox, and... He just looked at me and he's like, "Do you have any gaff tape?" Anyway, of course I do.
Sure,
goes,
but why?
Well, what do you want? He goes, "Just give me." Okay. And then he just did this, and then wrote a little message on it, which is only he knows what it's about. You know. And you know, over the last several years, it's really started to come undone in a kind of a cool way, actually.
Yeah.
You know,
it's starting to relic.
Yeah. For a while, too, I think that people actually thought it was painted, you know, because from the audience, it's hard to tell from pretty far away that this was actually just white gaff tape.
Now, I know he's been a long-time Ernie Ball guy, so what strings is he currently running on all these?
Ooh, we use a custom gauge set, actually. We use 52 to 11 with a wound G.
Okay.
Paradigm.
Oh, all right.
Ernie Ball. Shout out Tim Dove.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And so I just send him the set that we want that kind of fits for keeping him in tune.
Yeah. What's the reason with the custom wound G then?
keeping him in tune.
Literally, just intonation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just anything to give it. He's not really doing a lot of bending, as you may know.
Yeah.
You know, and so he didn't really need to. The wound G just kind of makes the guitar sit a little bit more in tune for
okay,
him.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, let's meet some of these other friends.
All right. This guy. This one is maybe my particular favorite. Sam Larson is a longtime friend of Tom. I think they used to work together at Macbeth.
Okay.
And he's an artist, and we sent him a blank body, and he painted this all by hand and sent it back.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's got this really nice matte finish. It feels really nice. Yeah. You see a lot of replicas of this one on the internet, which is pretty fun. You know, a lot of people, have just tried to do the same thing. It's really cool. This is the I Miss You guitar.
All right.
It gets played on a few other songs, Down.
Is there a specific tune you see you pull out of the C slot?
Yeah, so this is a standard capoed 2.
Okay.
Feeling this is drop D capo 2.
Okay.
But yeah, this one's really special. And it gets a special spot every night because
it's a cool Tom, you know, all the things that Tom
yeah into. There's a lot of little things in here that
Easter
you
eggs.
Know Loch Ness, and I don't know what this one's all about, but
aliens,
maybe he can tell you later.
Aliens exist.
Yeah.
I've heard it in a song.
Yeah, let's see what else we got here. This one is the main. This is his main guitar. So
that's Milo then, right?
Yeah, this is Milo.
Okay.
So when we first got the first four, they had nothing on it, like I was saying. And he sent me a picture like a day later and he had done all of this. And, you know, it's pretty cool because a lot of the Sharpie, it's just Sharpie.
Yeah.
It's not sealed. It's not, you know, and it's just kind of coming off.
Yeah.
You know.
I love the juxtaposition between Mark's beautifully crafted artwork, sealed by the Fender team, and then these ones are just stickers and Sharpie.
Yeah, and this guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, this thing gets a lot of stage time. Yep, this is the main standard guitar, and the bulk of the set's played on this.
Any reason? Just
I think
vibe?
He likes it the most. Okay. I think that he thinks... Also, I think this is like a big homage to his original Boxcar 335.
Okay.
The red one.
Yeah.
That was covered in stickers and kind of drawn over, which was, I think, the blueprint for his signature Gibson.
With the Gibson, 333.
Yeah. And so this is kind of, like a tip of the cap to that one.
Do you have any issues? And I know you guys are running fractals. We'll get into that. And then obviously in-ear monitors. So there's, I don't know how much stage volume, but is... Having any
feedback?
Issues with feedback?
No.
Yeah,
none
imagine
whatsoever.
With that setup, none.
No, there's no stage volume. So, occasionally, if he leaves it wide open at the downstage edge, the PA might catch a little bit of something and have it resonate. But for the most part, it's rock solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of nice. It doesn't make it very fun to watch from the side of the stage if you don't have in-ears in.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, they've performed very well. Even when we were doing the stadiums last year, the stage was actually out in front of the PA, and no issues whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's a testament to the everything that's working together in the ingredients.
Yeah.
What else we got here?
Let's see. This one's pretty fun too. This is his spare to the main. So this also gets played a lot.
Okay.
The other main standard guitar. Daphne blue with the almost like Burberry plaid underneath.
Do we got a name for this one?
Yeah, I call it Plaid Pantry.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the names.
Yeah, who you come up with them or is it Tom?
Tom comes up with some of them. Plaid Pantry is definitely something I just call it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's funny and stupid.
I'm a fan of alliteration, so you had me.
Yeah. And yeah, one day he just was like, give me a Sharpie. And so. Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is the only one with the matching headstock, too.
And it matches quite the bit, like plaid does.
Yeah, it does.
Now, were any of these last two part of the original four batch or no?
So that, the Plaid Pantry was not.
Okay.
Milo was.
Okay.
This Surf Green one was. The Mystic Aztec Gold one is.
Okay.
I call this one Gold Member.
Makes sense. Creative.
And there's an Olympic White one that he uses in his dressing room.
Okay.
That is one of the originals. Let's see.
I see two more down there.
Yeah.
With some fantastic
this
artwork.
This one's pretty fun. Yeah, we'll go with this one. The canary yellow.
What's this one's name?
I think I just call this one Smiley. You know?
Yeah. The Untitled, yeah.
This is half step down, so D standard. And currently on this leg of the tour, it's not being played at all.
Okay.
So there's only a handful of songs. I mean, the bulk of the set is
standard.
You know. But this is paint, pen, and Sharpie.
I can see how...
You can see, it at one point it looked pretty rock solid, and then through the gigs, it's starting to really come undone.
Yeah.
But actually, from a distance, I think it looks really cool.
It looks almost intentional.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't buy that kind of relicking these days.
No, you can't.
Not even from the Murphy Lab.
No.
You know?
Yeah, get out of here with that.
But yeah, I mean, you know, one day, all it had was the alien here. This also glows in the dark, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But he, of course, thought it needed more. And so I brought it into the dressing room and held it up while it was being projected on with the image. And our Tom's day-to-day guy, Jeff Pereira, just outlined it with Sharpie. And then our photographer, Daniel Rojas, just colored it in with paint pen.
It's a teamwork.
Which is really, really funny. I had to stand here for about 15 minutes and try not to move, because if I moved either way...
Screw it up.
Which, you know, probably wouldn't have mattered.
No one would have noticed it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now I see a pair of long necks down here.
Yeah. So that was an afterthought. We added a song, Obvious, into, I think, the second leg of the U.S. run.
Okay.
And it was tuned pretty low for what I was comfortable with on the rest of these. And so we had Thrasher build a baritone scale neck for these guys. And with the reverse headstock.
Which is cool. It looks slick.
Yeah, they're really fun to play. And they're... You know, obviously with that low of tuning through the rig, it just feels like there's a lot of weight behind it.
So what is the tuning? Because I think we talked off camera, it's kind of a...
It's C standard.
Okay.
So it's not really... For what they're doing, it's...
It's their baritone.
I guess in the... oh, yeah, yeah, you're right.
It's
a
blink baritone.
It's blink baritone. So it's baritone tuned up a step.
Okay.
Which is just something I guess they'd always done, you know. But yeah, this thing is... really cool, and it's sad that it's not going to get played for quite a while now.
Yeah.
You know. Also, Adam's song gets played on this, which...
And then would that be the C standard tuning too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what it is on the record, but
where it sits now.
Yeah. And so that one's a pretty heavy song for the guys, so...
Understandably.
They don't always play it.
Yeah, right. Understandably.
Yeah.
Man.
See. C standard isn't really that heavy in the...
In the scope of things, no, but
right.
Compared to what they normally would play, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's kind of it. Everything's kind of, like you said, the same.
Yeah.
Maple necks, rosewood fretboards.
The roasted maple neck, too, is one of my favorite touches on all of it. Let's see.
Is that got to be just me more of a aesthetic? Or
yeah.
Do you think it changes how it feels, tone?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that there are people out there that would probably claim that it does. I just think that it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And the you know.
Looks like just, caramel.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really a beautiful finish on the neck here.
Sounds like some weather's moving into beautiful Huntsville.
Yeah. Yeah, this one is kind of the same deal here where...
professional artwork.
Tom asked for gaff tape. And I said, which color do you want? And he said, to give me all of the ones that you have. But yeah.
He seems like an interesting guy to work for.
Yeah.
Like, no 2 days are the same.
No, he's an absolute sweetheart. And so it's a pleasure working with him.
Yeah.
These guys make me laugh. As anybody
who's
been
to a show. I don't know, man. They seem pretty
serious. I know.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of laughs. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm sure it'd be great to hear, like, in what you guys talk to in the, you know, the playback or in your team.
I'm
sure it's rated R.
The really funny thing, too, is, you know, what you see on stage and what happens in rehearsals and just even in the back, it's all the same.
Yeah.
It is, for the most part, that is exactly, it's not a bit, you know. Rehearsals are some of the funniest, like, parts of the tour.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So. I bet. I mean, I'm sure they're long days because it's a lot of you guys got to figure out and, you know, cram in. But having that levity will make it fly as much as it could.
Absolutely. Spread your butt cheeks like it's the Red Sea. It's Jesus the Christ. Yep. Praise be.
Well, talked about the gear here. Let's dive into the Fractal. I know that he's been at Axe FX for at least a tour or two, right?
Yeah, so I think it was 2019 that he made the switch, and it was when he brought Angels and Airwaves back.
Okay.
Which was actually my first tour ever as a guitar tech.
Really?
Yep. And
how'd that go?
It was good.
Okay.
It was great.
Yeah. I mean, you're still here, so.
I'm still here. I'm still here. He's, you know, brought me along for the ride for this thing, too. So it's been fun.
So at that point, that's when he switched from amps in either band. Yeah. Obviously, at that point, still being Angels.
Yep.
And then he went to the modeling
stuff. Yeah, to the digital stuff. You know, there had been a 7-year gap, I think. Something like that in between the last Angels run and when we came back.
In 2019.
So technology had made some strides. I think, you know, the 3s had just come out, the Axe FX 3. And so, this is what we've been using for the last 6 years.
Yeah. Now, can you talk to the people at home? I know they're going to want to know as much as you can tell, like what, because I know, like, back in the day, it was Mesas, Dual Rex, Triple Rex, Marshalls, Marshall Power Amps.
Yeah.
And then, you know, eventually went to Vox and Fenders.
Yep.
So where are we sitting there in the Fractal world, what you're capturing, what you're using?
Yeah, so the bulk of the set is made up or comprised of really 4 sounds.
Okay.
And we, the audio team, Tom and myself, wanted to kind of treat it like it was a real amp and pedal board and not have very hyper specific sounds for each song and just have a cohesive tone template that would kind of work for every album.
Okay.
Right. And so, you know, the main dirty sound is comprised of a plexi, like a jumped plexi.
Okay.
And a Soldano 88.
Which I think is something he had used prior, or at least that's adapted to what was going on here in the Fractal.
Oh boy.
We're getting rain.
I don't know if he had used that before.
He got to that combination. He's been there for 6 years now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Angels stuff actually was where I learned maybe not to make every single song a completely different tone and preset and throw the audio team kind of for a loop, and it just kind of made more sense to me and the guys to just treat it like an amp pedal board.
Okay.
That's advice I would give to anybody using a modeler.
Really?
Unless, I mean, for at least what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So treat it like a pedal board amp situation. So you got the Soldano and you said the kind of modded plexi.
Yep. That's the dirty sound for sure. And then the clean sound is comprised of let's see what it is here. A CA3 Plus, which is actually a rack-mounted studio clean amp that you almost never see on tour.
Yeah.
And a deluxe reverb.
All right, Justin, so we're looking kind of at the nuts and bolts of the Fractal.
Yeah.
You were kind of saying that the signal doesn't change based on anything getting put in or out of it, right?
Right. I like to kind of come up with a template that we can use for every song. And so from where it starts to finishes here, It's got every block that we would need to comprise any sound during the set.
Okay.
And I like to do that to keep the CPU load the same consistently for every song. That way there's just consistency there, you know.
Uh-huh.
But for example, you know, you've got the modulation section there on the first few blocks. If he wants a chorus, a phaser, or a flanger, they're right there, ready to just turn on, and I don't have to alter the signal path.
Got it.
You know, the two drive blocks afterwards that, you know, get used for whatever he could possibly need there.
So those go into the amp, and then amp into cab.
Yep.
And you got the GEQ after.
Yep. So there is a little graphic EQ stuff going on. Nothing crazy, you know.
Is it some mids or what? Do you know what kind of bump or taken away we're doing?
Well, it changes depending on
what song, probably.
Yeah. But for this sound in particular, too, we use this pitch block. Actually, for all of the clean sounds, we use a pitch block.
Really?
Yeah, I won't exactly get into the specifics of what it's doing, but...
But what's the general idea?
It widens the sound.
It's so funny. There's so many different ways that people will do that. I've heard, like, people do select chorus.
Yeah, and so the pitch just kind of pushes one side out and widens and thickens the tone for this kind of brittle, clean sound.
Got it.
Yeah.
Huh.
He's not super particular about a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, a lot of the decisions get made by myself over here until he hears it and goes, yeah, that's great, or try again.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is he particular about then?
I don't know.
Nothing pertaining to guitar?
Not really, you know.
Good.
Not really.
For you.
He's a very easy person to work for.
That's awesome.
Yeah. As long as the pack is on, I think he's going to be happy.
Justin, the bar is low.
Yeah, yes, yes, yeah.
What about cabs, should we know? Because like we talked about before, there's a bunch of shells of HC30 combos up there. Obviously, there's nothing in
That's
them.
That's all new to this tour.
But what are you guys mimicking inside the fractal stuff?
So the clean sound actually is going through AC30 top boost. A blue and a silver.
Okay.
And the main drive sounds are Marshall.
Okay.
And
like a 412?
Cabs.
Okay.
Yep. With
and
V30s.
Then V30s in both of them?
Yep. Red wired.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then is there anything that's going on? People have asked, and I saw on the line, you know, as the nerd herd we have in our, you know, community, they're asking about like anything EQ-wise or compression that's either going on with the fractal system or maybe even front of house. With Tom's tone?
So front of house is really where all the magic happens.
Okay.
He, you know, Charlie Izzo is out there, and he has racks of outboard gear that all of this stuff is running through.
So Charlie's making some moves out there, too.
Yeah. We do have a Neve preamp over here.
Saw that.
A lot of questions.
Well, let's answer them.
That. Yeah, it's the 5211. Essentially, the audio team is using a lot of Neve gear.
Mm-hmm.
And... really what it does is they're going to run it through this exact preamp over in their world anyways. And so the audio team is like, why don't you just put it over here?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to run through hundreds of feet of cable to hit that first. It can hit it here at the source and then come to us that way.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it just takes the tone and adds a little color to it and brings it to life a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, makes it 5% better.
Yeah, you know? But that 5% matters, especially to these guys and to this crew.
Yeah, and really, you know, I wasn't exactly sold on it until we threw it in. I think it was midway through the first run. And yeah, it does sounds fantastic.
Now I saw off camera, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's like a. So Tom, is he making the switches himself? Because there's one right here that looks to be maybe for you.
Yeah.
But then I saw like a smaller strip.
Yeah, so we've got an FC-12 up here and an FC-6 for him. All of the MIDI changes are coming from the playback world.
Okay.
And so everything's on the grid.
Okay.
And getting changed with playback.
Okay.
There is, however, one switch up here that we let Tom hit a lot.
Okay.
And it's this red button right over here.
Triple X.
Yeah. And so Tom likes to do a lot of pick slides.
Love
kind of his thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so we were trying to figure out how to map the system to change back to the dirty sound every time he may or may not want to do one. And it was
it's a wild
particular
card.
Challenge to think there's no way that we're going to be able to nail it every time. You're going to start going for it and it's going to still be in the clean sound and it's going to be really embarrassing for me, for you, you know. And so the solution I came up with is that on every single preset, the last button over here is a mirrored image of the main dirty sound. Because the layout of each preset changes per song,
okay.
You know. And so there's this red button over here. Anytime he wants to go and do that, or for any reason he wants to get into that sound, he can go over there and hit it, and it's in the same place every time, and it's nice and red.
It's a nice escape hatch.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I saw the little strip for him has, like, indications of, like, -5, +1.
Ooh.
What's going on there?
That's a different thing. Okay, so our former monitor engineer, Ray Jeffrey, came up with this pretty ingenious solution. None of the guys have talkback mics on stage that I'm aware of. If they do, they've never used them, and they might not even know that they're there.
Okay.
So Tom, for years with Angels, would have kind of like almost baseball signals
that
he would shoot to Ray, our old monitor engineer.
Yeah.
And he would know what that would mean. You know, like he wants 2K or something on the EQ to be pulled up, or he needed help with this, or maybe, you know, click track up or down. And, you know, Tom always will take his left hand off and adjust his pack volume if he needs to when he needs to be playing.
Yeah.
You know. So those are two Blackstar MIDI controllers. Mm-hmm. That send a signal over to this board. The bottom one incrementally jumps his pack up by up or down by a certain amount of dBs.
Yeah.
And the middle button zeroes it out. So he can just hit that and come up and down in volume.
So literally just for his in-ear monitors.
And then the other one on the top sends a MIDI message over to the desk, which has like a Macintosh voice that says like, a click track up or a click track down. There's five things that it says. I think there's one that just says, "Hey, Ray," and that's for him to look up and see if he needs something.
Make eye contact,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was kind of just an ingenious way of helping Tom out on stage and getting him to a good place.
Quicker.
Yeah.
Well, Justin, I really appreciate it. We're going to go over and talk to Brian about Mark's gear, but hey, man, I really appreciate it.
No problem. Great to meet you, man.
Great to meet you as well.
Hey, everybody. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario has been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
All right, we are now joined by Brian Diaz, Mark's Tech. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm good. I'm good. It's a little warm, but
yeah.
I'm good.
Welcome to the South.
I know.
We greet you with a warm hug.
It's like my glasses are steaming up.
This is actually kind of a calm day when it comes to the heat and humidity. We're in Huntsville, Alabama, as we said at the start, but yeah. Talk to me about some of the basses here, because you know everyone wants to see these bad boys. So let's dive right into it.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the thing.
I think you get a special one, right?
Yeah. Well, this first one right here, it's only been played a couple times on this tour, but it's most well known as the bass that was used on the recording of Enema of the State.
For that record?
For that record, yep. Yeah. It was on there on a handful of songs. I think some people do know exactly which ones. I don't think even Mark remembers which ones. But he was using this, and then he switched to P basses right around that time. And he switched to a P bass that he bought right off the shelf at Guitar Center. Him and Jerry Finn went in and just grabbed it. And it was he named it Petey.
Okay.
And this bass that we have now that we've been using on I Miss You, Mr. Peters, is like the kind of the new signature, his like signature model that's like kind of modeled after Petey.
Okay.
So that's why it's a Mr. Peters. But yeah, this is one of the show basses. But
what does Mr. Peters get used on? You said I Miss You and that's it?
Right now I'm only using on I Miss You because it gets the capo, or do it the right way.
Yeah.
And it gets the capo on the two, and I don't know why he uses the capo, but he does. And that's, that's how that goes. But
and I Miss You is in what tuning with the capo?
They're all standard. Well, it's going to be an F, B, E, A, or something.
Got
it's
it.
Like a, yeah, just standard, but capoed on two.
Got it.
And then all the other basses are kind of like one-of-kind art pieces. Like this one here is, we call this one Stoned Fruit, and it's... Yeah, this guy, he goes by the name Burrito Breath, an artist in out of Ohio.
All right.
I guess Mark just contacts these people online.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
He'll follow an artist on Instagram or whatever and be like, hey, I'm Mark from Blank. Would you like to, like to commission a piece of art on a bass from you?
Be curious if he ever gets any no's.
I don't know. This one was done by JP Walker. He's Jeremiah Puritan. He's out of Florida. This is a Dialga because it's named after the Pokemon character. I don't know anything about Pokemon, so
same.
This is is out of my wheelhouse, but just that guy.
So they're all based on kind of the Jag SIG.
Yeah. So he has
quarter pounder.
This is the signature model.
Okay.
And this one is kind of. Was meant, I think, kind of to look like one of his classic basses, Lettuce, but we went with the painted head cap, and we went with the reverse P pickups, which he's explained before. It allows there to be more, because of the way he's attacking his strings. This is right where he's like, he's using E and A a whole lot,
yeah.
So he's getting more of the sound from here. I forget how he explained it, but it's something that they did it and he loved the way it sounded, and now everything gets the reverse.
Yeah.
The reverse thing, and it's like the quarter pound pickups, a pretty standard.
Do you know if it was something like he came up with, or Jerry or they suggested it?
No, he came up with it. He's
like, hey, I want to.
Yeah, he said flip these for me, and then that became a thing, and now it's that's like the Mark Hoppus signature.
Got it. And what can you tell us about strings?
The strings are, they're the Pink Pack Slinkies, okay. The 100 to 45s.
And I saw some picks over here, if I can grab one. What do we got for picks?
Dunlop 60s. Ernie Ball strings, Dunlop picks, very standard stuff. But we always, every tour we get something new. It's kind of interesting, like not a lot of bass players play with picks that thin.
Yeah.
But I got used to it because for years I worked for Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy,
mm-hmm.
And he plays very thin picks,
yeah.
Like that, like 60s, and then Mark plays them, Tom plays them, all the guys in Fall Out Boy played them, so now I play bass and
so it affected your tone.
Yeah, it's made it so that I'm playing thinner, whatever, but I kind of, it feels comfortable.
Yeah.
I get why he does it. I'm like, I don't like the big chunky picks. I know some people play like,
yeah,
there's, the big bass
business
picks.
Cards.
Yeah. So yeah, some of the other basses we have, this is one of his older, custom jobs, the Dabs Myla. Dabs Myla is a couple from Australia. They live in LA, friends of the band,
okay.
friends of Mark. And this is one of my favorite ones. Like, you feel it. It's just like, it's not glossy. It's like a matte, just a nice matte finish. I just love it. And the art's really cool.
Yeah.
This is a really cool bass. I love this one. And this one sounds, I don't know why, this one just sounds a little tiny bit brighter.
Hmm.
And I I don't know. I really like it. I don't know why it does.
And we got to make a note of that because people ask.
Yeah, everybody asks about this. This is disconnected. There's no. This is just. It's I don't know if it the body. This is they just had a PJ body, hybrid body or whatever. But this one was made like this, and they filled the hole with the pickup that is not connected to anything.
Yeah,
and it has this too, little compartment.
Huh. But not active. Up.
I don't know. You can you can hide your
stuff.
Your
yeah.
Hide your stuff in there. Yeah. So this one I love this bass a lot, and it's one of his favorites. And he's friends with the artists as well. So it's cool.
And so and obviously the guys have a direct line to Thrasher Brian at Fender.
So yeah, Brian Thrasher, he built the two, Mr. Peters and Old Red, the green one.
Makes sense.
Old Red. I think it's because he's Irish. So, yeah, he also put together some of these bases. Like, the artist will do the body, and then we'll send it over to Fender. They'll clear coat it so that the art doesn't wear off.
Yeah.
And they'll assemble some of it. They'll send me a neck, and I'll put the neck on. Or, like, for the Stone Fruit bass, I did all the electronics and built it out, and he sent me the neck with the painted. They match the headstock to the body. So this one came from an artist in England who goes by the name Thumbs. So we sent this body over to England. He painted it up, sent it back, and assembled it in the States. This one's pretty cool. I like the pink pickguard on this. It's getting a little chipped away. Obviously it got painted, and that's right where he's
in the sweet spot.
Yeah, it's right in the sweet spot, so starting to lose a pink. But
I was bringing up Brian is like, what does he shape the neck to? And I noticed all of them are unfinished or sanded, at least.
Yeah, so these have been sanded down. He likes it down to the wood, basically. And then I do a little oil on it, and then a lot of just natural hand oils, turn it dark and kind of seal it up. But this is it's like a jazz profile neck, but even somehow slimmer. Mm. Like it feels. I mean, touch it. It's really small. And it's just got, he's got comfortable playing that. And over time, I had to swap out necks on some of his older basses that he wanted to play. Like this one here, Terminal Radness, which is the artist who made it. This had a different neck at one point. It had a thicker, chunkier P bass neck. And this has, as you can see, legitimately a jazz bass neck. And I was asking them, I'm like, oh, do you have any of those, a slimmer profile neck? And this is the only thing they had, was this one that had this painted headstock. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to work. And somehow it kind of does.
Yeah.
Even though it's...
Especially with the Scully.
Yeah, the blue in there, it's kind of matches. And I put it on, and I was like, showed it to Mark. He's like, it's gross. I love it. He's like, we're using it. I mean, he's known for his, super bright, bright and fluorescent, he's had pink basses and
bold colors.
He's had, fluorescent yellow. That thing basically glows in the dark, And then this is another one we had done. The artist's name is Pants.
Huh.
And he does these kind of little bee characters, and it's pretty cool. Yeah. I've gotten so used to playing these that I kind of want a jazz neck now.
I'm sure it's all the time that he's had, those previous models he's had, and then now with the Jag being his kind of main thing.
Yeah, like his most well-known model, and like his most well-known basses are like Lettuce, which is a green, this green P bass.
Yeah.
The pink Scully bass that has the skull inlays.
Yeah.
I mean, those are his most well-known instruments, and we brought them out on tour, but they're so old and they're so iconic and kind of almost like they belong in a glass case or something.
Yeah.
I mean, he has one or two of them at home that he just, keeps at home. So yeah, that's.
And that's what that's, that, the green one does. It travels with the band, right?
Well, right now this one is in the, this bass is in the VIP lounge, which we have, fans can go and get a kind of up close look at it. And we take it out once in a while to he brought it on stage and people were like, holy shit.
Yeah, I bet.
He's playing the bass. And our sound guys are just like, oh, this bass sounds so different. You're killing me with this.
I was going to ask because that's an active bass.
They actually like it because If we're going to use it on just one song, we'll use it on I Miss You. And because it, I Miss You, in the set, we have a very like thumpy, muted sort of tone. They can actually roll it back on the bass. You can't do that on any of these other ones because they don't have any sort of tone control. It's no. just volume. So this one actually works for that. You can roll back that and get that like kind of thumpy, like upright bass sound.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right on, Brian. I know that we cruised through basses. Let's talk about the rack here. And I know we'll show some screenshots of it, but DSP, the neural DSP, quad yep. cortex. Before that, you were saying the Kemper, so you guys have made the transition since then?
Yeah, so in 2022, that's when I started working for Mark, and sorry, that's going to drive me nuts. 2022, I started working for Mark. It was unfortunate what happened. His tech had passed away. He was a good friend of mine, Robert Ortiz. Worked for Mark for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the last setup they had was a Kemper setup. So when I got the call to do this and I went through the gear, I was like, I guess I got to get familiarized with the Kemper. I'd never really been in that world before. I'd done some digital stuff with Garbage. We used Line 6, you know, the Helix and stuff. So I kind of knew a little. The Kemper, I didn't really know. And right when I was kind of starting to get familiar with it, he hit me up and was like, I kind of want to try a neural a quad cortex. And I had gotten one to try, so I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's like
learn it together.
Let's start making sounds. And and I was contacted by someone in the Bay Area that had a studio where he had one of Jerry Finn's SVT heads that he had bought, because I guess that, you know, after he had passed, there was some of his gear had been auctioned or whatever.
Yeah.
So he had purchased the head and had made a profile of it.
Wow.
So he sent me, if you look in this thing, the main sound that we have is the Jerry Finn Ampeg SVT. So
Whoa.
We use that with just a stock A10 sound, but that became the kind of like foundation of the tones that we started making.
How did that conversation happen with that guy in San Francisco? Did they reach out to you?
He just reached out to me because he was following me on Instagram, just like, you know, he was a fan of Blink and a fan, you know, just had seen my photos and stuff. And he was like, he's like, you know, I have this thing. He's like, do you want, you know, I'll make you, he's like, I have a studio. I'll make you a profile.
Cool.
So he sent me the profile. He's like, and I was like, I'm going to put it in the chain.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I mean, is it any different than any other SVT? I don't know, but it's kind of like, I like the,
but he was the fourth
having
member
the providence
for so long.
Of that. Yeah, like the, just like knowing that like a piece of that history was, you know, kind of passed on digitally.
You know?
It's kind of cool. And I mean, it does sound really good.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it's an SVT. Like,
and so the
if you're gonna go digital and you're gonna mimic something, let's mimic the,
that's where it's going to start.
Yeah,
typically,
like, right.
So beyond that, kind of, you showed us before, there's only like five or six core sounds on top of that, right?
Yeah, it's like really just using like his main tone, which I call growl, is it's just a kind of, it's got a little drive on it. And
we went
a little kind of a little more drivey, and then there's like filthy, which is like a full-on, like it's got a fuzz on top of it. And then there's the chorus sound, which is a very clean sound with the chorus, very, you know, thumpy, which is the one I was saying we use for I Miss You.
Okay.
It's just a rolled back tone. What else? Oh, halfy. That's like a halfway between filthy and clean.
What's filthy then? Like, what's the fuzz? Do you know
the fuzz? The fuzz in the, I'm just using a stock, the what they call the Soviet fuzz in there, which is based off a muff.
Yeah.
The growl tone is I did a capture of a Keeley Noble Screamer.
It's
one of the new ones.
And
on a kind of a low gain, but it gave it, because I was using it in my studio for my through my rig, and I was like, ooh, this sounds pretty cool, like on a bass.
Yeah.
It had like a nice little bite to it. So I modeled that, put that in there. His filthy sound is actually an Orange Terror that I modeled at one point for what I just like had it cranked, and then I added the fuzz on top of it, and it just sounded super gnarly.
Yeah.
So I just decided to go with
that. Are you designing these kind of like carte blanche, you're able to go there and then show Mark, or is Mark kind of like hands-on where
it's a little,
things
it's a little
need
of
to
both.
Be
like I some of the stuff I've captured, I'm like, hey, give this a listen, let me know what you think of it, and he's like, that could be, you know, we could change the tone on that or whatever. You know, like right now, this halfy sound is that new JHS 424 pedal.
Oh yeah.
The Tascam thing, and I was like, what would this sound like on a bass? And I started messing with it, and I got it. You know, it just sounds real crackly and weird, and but it's you know, it made sense for that sound.
Yeah.
And he had gotten one like the day it came out, and I was like, let me capture it. Let's get a few different sounds out of it. And I threw it in the chain. I'm like, let me know if you like it. And he's like, yep, sounds good.
Yeah, right on.
That was it. And then Kitty is the Hello Kitty fuzz set to stun, and it's only for one part of one song. It sounds like here's the thing. I've always been told you can't capture a fuzz pedal properly, which is I think true. I think it's there's something about it that doesn't.
The ones and zeros don't like that.
No, but set it to stun, and it does some weird shit that sounds cool. Like this sounded like a sawtooth wave, like almost like a synth. It sounded like a bass synth, and I was like, this is perfect for this one part of the song.
Well, what song?
Wishing Well.
Okay.
So it's in the bridge of Wishing Well, and you can hear it because it's a little louder than everything else, and it just kind of goes. It's like this like crazy sound. And the first time he hit it, I was like, I want you to try this. He hit it, and he's like, yes. He's like, that's the one. I'm like, all right, cool.
Instant approval.
And then the clean sound is just a very no drive kind of clean for like softer, like little, when you need a little more clarity on a.
Got it.
It doesn't really get used much. But.
And so it's basic, again, SVT from the Jerry Finn collection, and then also the 8x10.
The 8x10 that's in there, yeah. So then, and you threw a little room reverb on there, and that's pretty much it. And then there's a looper function on it that I operate at the end of the show, because he does a thing where he just rings out and just like wants a loop to keep going until they walk off stage. So like I gotta like watch them and time it, you know, like it's always the same end every night, but it's like and get that loop going.
All right, so we got the Shure Wireless and the JX44, but what else we got, Brian?
Well, this is the newest thing we have, is this the Fretronix RSW. So this is an auto switcher. Like before this, we had the radial backtrack to switch between the A and B units of the quad cortexes. In case one went out, you know, you can just, you know, do that. But this one is sending tone through the effects loop of the cortex. So if it loses tone, it'll automatically switch over.
Nice.
And it won't let you switch back until this is corrected. So right now I can't switch back. Now I can correct it and reset the whole unit, and it now it's back to A B, and you just hit that, and now it's sending tone again.
And then at the bottom there, I see another.
Device. The 5211, the Rupert Neve preamp. You know, every part of our audio chain, vocals, guitars, every drums, they're all going through. Neve mix buses and Shelford channels or whatever, and our audio team was like, you guys should put these in your rigs. So I told Mark, I was like, hey, they're you know, saying it's going to be maybe 5% better sound or some sort of tone coloration that you know you want, and he was like, well, let's get two of them, put one on each rig, and then you know if we don't like it, he can go to his studio, you know. So he now owns this really cool preamp that everyone's like, why do you have a Neve preamp in your bass rig? I'm like,
why not
exactly.
And then on stage there's no live cabs or anything,
no,
right?
Live cabs. I have it set up, so when I built this rig, we had it set up so that if I ever wanted to add live amps or live anything to it, I could. We don't. I have just this little thing up here, this little Fender Rumble. So like if the ears aren't up yet and I want to listen to something, I can.
Got it. I didn't know if this was the core tone.
Yeah. No, they gave us Michael Schultz over at Fender.
Oh, he's great.
Mike
helps us out with a lot of these rig
rundowns.
So Michael,
the best. Shout out Mike.
He's
the man. He gets whenever we need something, cabinets, like we were. So I know you saw the stage set has like all these like Fender cabinets and Vox and whatever. And originally we were supposed to have three cabinets. As you can see, there's a lot more than that.
There's more than three.
Well, but you know, they had Scenic build all these, you know, what looks like cabinets. I'm like, but we needed, you know, a couple to start with, and he got them to us like overnight. Stuff like that, like,
yeah,
is invaluable to have someone I can just call and be like, hey man, I need this. And like, we needed a little practice room amp, and we got that. And whenever they need to do a little practice room thing, we have that amp. But I use it to, you know, monitor if I need to monitor something without.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate your time and the rest of the guys' time and the crew here. But I got to ask one last question about your personal setup.
Oh,
the coffee rig.
The coffee rig. Well, you know, Mark's a big coffee guy.
All the small
guy.
Beans.
Mark's a big coffee guy. I'm a big coffee guy. There's a lot of coffee drinkers on the tour. And, you know, you go to a place and they don't have good coffee.
No.
You kind of, like, have to search around.
So tell me about your rig.
I eliminated that. I just got my little pour over. I got my Kalita Wave with this. Everything has to be plastic or metal because I've brought glass out and shattered it inside these, you know, in the drawers, and like there's glass everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, we people come and bring me these beans right now. I got this paper plane coffee company. This guy out of Jersey gave me a bunch of these beans. And then this is a collaboration that he did with Daryl, you know, Daryl McDaniel, DMC.
Yeah.
And we were at Sea Here Now, the festival in Jersey.
Okay.
And he, DMC was just standing inside the stage, and I was like, hey, I'm like, I have your coffee. And he's like, you know my boy Jonathan? He's like, let's send him a picture. And I was like, what?
Like, that rules.
It's crazy. I grew up listening to Raising Hell. So
that's awesome, man. That's a full circle moment.
Full circle. Thanks to
Coffee.
Thanks to coffee.
Brian, really appreciate your time, man.
Thank you.
You guys stay
man.
Safe and keep rocking.